On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed without having seen it, just be aware that the plot will be spoiled for you, and there's some kind of general spoilers about Star Wars as well, because we end up just having quite a lot of Star Wars chat. Enjoy. It's time to podcast. Listen to two blokes talk about films with romantic plots.
Hello.
Ah, I can hear you now. I went just for just a voice call there.
Ah, that maybe that is helping. Maybe we've got some technical issues.
Yeah, which is a shame because I like how whenever we start the call, I always get just a little clip of you lying in your bed in your your lazy podcast position.
Yeah. That is my go-to, is just lying in bed chatting.
You just give me a little sneaky shot, and then you close the camera.
It's a little window into the life of Rob.
A little window.
I like what you did there. So let's listeners, we had some technical issues before this call started. So let's start.
A disturbance in the force.
It was a disturbance in the force. So let's start again now. Now is the beginning.
Yeah, this is the real actual beginning.
This is episode one of the Phantom Podcast.
Big Boys Don't Cry, The Phantom Menace.
Yeah. So
wait, which one of us is Jar Jar?
No, none of us are Jar Jar. Jar Jar is anyone who has disdain for our opinions.
Yeah, which is everyone, clearly.
So let's get cracking then, right? Let's talk episode 2, Attack of the Clones. And one of the most interesting things about rewatching this is rewatching it as a standalone movie away from the other Star Wars films.
So did you go and see this in the cinema when it first came out? Do you have a recollection of this?
I did. This is the only one of the prequels that I didn't see at the cinema. I saw the others, but I missed this one.
Were you so scarred by The Phantom Menace?
I have a soft spot for The Phantom Menace. It's a bad movie, but there's something enjoyable about it. And it's such a weird film that I think, you know, as a kid, it felt strange. And it's like, oh, this is weird. It doesn't really feel very Star Wars-y, but hey, it's got lightsabers. That's cool. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that it's a very, very strange film. And I kind of, you know, it's, I can see why people don't like it, but I can watch it.
Yeah. I agree with that. Totally. I think there's something about it that is still interesting, and I like Liam Neeson and, the Darth Maul theme, the Jewel of the Fates. That is an incredible piece of music. And it gets in my head sometimes.
It is amazing.
And, yeah, it's the thing with people our age who are Star Wars fans on The Phantom Menace. It came out in 1999 when we were 11 years old. So, you know, it's a tough one at that age because, I don't know, when had you already seen the original trilogy at that point? I guess now we're talking about The Phantom Menace, but I think we should, just for a bit of contextualization.
Yeah, so I'd already seen the original trilogy, pretty much. I don't remember a time in my life where I hadn't seen Star Wars.
Right.
I can't think of the first time I saw Star Wars. It's so ingrained in me from a very young age.
That's really interesting, because I have a very distinct memory of one Christmas, I think, when I was 7 or 8, maybe 9 around that age. I think I might have been 9, actually. My dad got me the, like, reissued, remastered VHS box set of the original trilogy, and we sat down and watched it together over the course of that Christmas break, and I was just completely blown away by it. Like, I'd never seen anything like it. And me and my dad now still have this kind of Star Wars thing. We always try and go and see every new film together if we can, and stuff. It's a really nice thing. And I remember The Phantom Menace coming out, and it being like, oh my god, there's a new Star Wars. This is a huge thing. And feeling like, obviously, my dad explained to me like how big Star Wars was for his generation, and like when he was young, and in his teens and stuff, and now there was this new thing and I was going to get to experience that. So for me it was such a huge event, and I was 11 years old. I didn't really have much of a sense of, you know, bad filmmaking, actually, and I thought it was great and I loved it. And then later on sort of came to realize what is perceived to be wrong with it, but I think it's still quite a goofy and fun and enjoyable film, Jar Jar aside.
Yeah, Jar Jar aside, there's a lot to enjoy about it. And there's a lot to enjoy about the things that are wrong with it as well.
Yeah.
Where there's this corniness and this just general just strangeness to the whole thing where it's but you can still enjoy it in the same way that it's not to the same extent as you can enjoy The Room just in terms of how many rules it breaks, but
yeah,
it's got that same kind of quality where you can just relish in the goofiness of the whole thing. And again, I remember, like you said, the release of episode one was this phenomenon because it's, oh my God, it's a new Star Wars film. And it was opening up this pathway to this whole new story that had been hinted at. And there was this huge expectation behind it, which it none of the movies met. But I think there's something about all three of them that's enjoyable. Having said that, Attack of the Clones is the worst of the three.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with that. It's the Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince of the Star Wars universe, isn't it? Just a really long, brooding bag of old nonsense.
And I think that kind of carries through to the Revenge of the Sith as well.
Did you almost say one. Revenge of the Shit just then?
I did not.
It's
I
too tempting.
I feel like lots of people say that the best prequel movie is the third one, and I disagree. Because I find it is too dour, it's too deliberately dark.
See, I like it the best out of the three, but only because you get to see him becoming Darth Vader, and that's cool. That's the only thing that's good about it.
He gets to go, no! Yeah. That's great.
And it's got a big boss Palpatine doing his thing.
It does. And I think the real thing that saves that third movie is Palpatine, because he's just so enjoyable in that film, just maniacally laughing, flying around, hurling chairs at Yoda.
Yep.
It's just like, mate, he's loving life. He is living life to its fullest.
Shouting ultimate power life as he kills Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah. And there is that really good line in it about how this is how democracy dies. Not with shock, but with applause or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's a good line, George Lucas. Well done.
Yeah. Solar systems want to leave the Republic. Sounds a lot like Brexit. Whop.
I wonder if anywhere a Brexiteer has made a sort of allegory between the Trade Federation being the evil EU and Naboo being the glorious independent nation of Britain.
Yeah, for sure. There's some kind of Brexit equivalent of Boss Nass out there. Actually, have you ever seen a picture of Aaron Banks?
Oh,
who's that horrible man? He looks a lot like Boss Nass.
He does look a lot like Boss Nass. So this movie, it's not as weird as The Phantom Menace.
No.
But it does have some of my favourite idiot moments in Star Wars. So I absolutely love that this film has like a 1950s diner in it.
Yeah,
for no good reason. Run by Dexter Jetster, who has got one of the best Star Wars names.
He's great. I love him. I wanted more of him. I would watch a film just about him.
I would watch a sitcom about that little diner.
Yeah.
It would be so cool. But then you've also got one of the best Star Wars names, possibly the best Star Wars name, Kit Fisto. He's one of the Jedi Masters.
Which one is that? Is that the Conehead guy?
No, that's the Squid Face guy.
Oh, the Squid Face guy. Yeah,
yeah. Squid Face guy is Kit Fisto.
You notice that some of the Jedi are women. There aren't that many, yes, but there are a couple of women in there.
Yeah, there's some women in there.
So and fuck off the people who claim that a woman couldn't be a Jedi in reference to the recent films, you stupid pricks.
What's funny about that is that there's been female Jedi in all of the books as well.
Yeah, and like that is canon.
Female Jedi are a big part of... well, they're no longer canon, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so anything that happened after the end of Return of the Jedi in the books is now known as Star Wars Legends, and it's no longer canon, so that Disney could do what they wanted with the new movies without having to worry about it.
I guess that's fair enough.
So there's elements of it that they've clearly taken influence from those sort of like books and games and everything like that, but they are very much no longer canonical, which is a shame because some of them are very interesting story-wise, but it is what it is. But yeah, so Kit Fisto, we've got Dexter Jetster.
Mace Windu.
Mace Windu.
Who fell out the window in episode 3.
He did fall out the window.
I don't know why. I always found that name funny. Windu.
What, Mace Windu?
Yeah.
Mace Windu is definitely what you use to clean glass, though.
Yeah.
You get a nice bottle of Mace Windu down the pound shop.
Yeah. It's like, do I want Mace Windu or do I want Cillit Bang? Which one exactly. Have they got the offer on?
Exactly. Then you've got Count Dooku. That's a good name.
Count Dooku, yep.
Zam Wessel, which is a real Mike what? Truck, isn't it?
Zam Wessel? Who's that?
So that is the other bounty hunter, you know, the one who is like a shapeshifter.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, we're definitely assembling an intergalactic team of 8-bit baseball players here.
And then, yeah, so Longhead Man, I think, is Ki Adi Mundi.
Right. That's quite cool. I like that.
Which is a good name. But yeah, I love stupid Star Wars names. They're so good.
All of them in the prequel trilogy all just sound like they were made up by an 8-year-old. And it's great. Darth Sidious, even.
There's this great story about they were trying to make a Darth Maul standalone game, this game development company that were being licensed out by LucasArts. But George Lucas took interest in the project, which was not a good thing.
Oh, no.
And I swear it's true. There was something about it where he refused to let them go ahead with the project unless they named one of the characters Darth Icky.
That is so George Lucas.
Yeah, I love a bit of George.
It's odd, isn't it, that it was obvious that he does have this incredible vision, but with the original trilogy, there were other people working on it, and he didn't have that kind of level of egomaniacal involvement. And with this prequel trilogy, they just let him do everything, and here we are, Count Dooku.
I know that it's kind of a hushed name now in Star Wars fandom because of the treatment of the sequels and the constant tinkering with the original films. But I've got time for George.
Yeah, I mean, without him, we wouldn't have Star Wars, which is a wonderful thing, you know.
Even
when we're watching these like bad films, a bad Star Wars film, as soon as that the opening crawl comes up, as soon as it goes ba-da-da, I get chills every time.
Yeah. Whereas
you've
got to have respect for a man who created this legacy and then refuses to bow at all to what the fans want and does whatever the hell he wants with it.
Yeah.
In the face of millions of people criticizing him.
And that's actually more relevant now than it's ever been in terms of just the sheer entitlement and nuttiness of fans of things.
Yes, yeah. Because Star Wars fans, you think they're bad now. They've always been very, very critical. And if you look at the fan reaction to the prequels, you know, I'm critical of them and I don't think they're particularly good movies, but you look at how some people feel about them and it's really quite striking how much emotional focus they have on Star Wars as part of their persona. And as part of their personal brand almost.
Yeah, and I love Star Wars. I don't know how much I've elaborated on this, but when I'm watching it, I love it so much, but I don't think of it as a thing that defines me in any way. I would say I'm a big fan of it, and I'm always really excited about the new films and everything, and I could watch it over and over again, but I've never felt that way, like it's a thing that I own, you know?
Exactly.
And I do have nostalgia for it as well. As I said, I talked about getting the original trilogy and what an incredible thing for me that was and how mind-blowing it was. And I knew that it was just a great thing. But yeah, I've never felt that way about it.
Yeah, and I'd say that I'm a pretty huge Star Wars fan. And any kind of Star Wars media, I will just gobble up. I love Star Wars.
How do you feel about oranges with a sticker on it with a picture of BB-8 on it?
I would eat them, sticker and all. That's how serious I am about
Star
Wars. Well,
what if I told you that oranges are not the only fruit with a Star Wars sticker on them? I think it was actually around the time of The Force Awakens. There were loads of Star Wars stickers on all the fruit in my local Sainsbury's, and that really made me chuckle.
Can I get a banana with Kit Fisto's face on it?
I'll do my best. I'll post it to you.
Yeah, you better. Yeah, so I'm a huge Star Wars fan, but I still find it something very uncomfortable about the people that are so heavily critical over something that they love. And as I've said, Attack of the Clones is my least favorite Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
But there's still things to enjoy about it. And I don't skip any of them if I'm doing a Star Wars marathon. They've all got their place.
No, and this has got me wanting to do a marathon again. So actually, I did watch this, and then I did watch Revenge of the Sith afterwards as well. I didn't then want to go back to watch The Phantom Menace. I feel like I've actually weirdly seen The Phantom Menace more times because when I was 11 and 12, around that age, we got the video and I watched it loads, and I had a toy that was the ship from Naboo or something, I think. So I watched that. I feel like I watched that enough for a lifetime. But for now, sure. And now I am kind of doing a bit of a marathon again, just on under my own steam in my own time. So I watched Revenge of the Sith, and it wasn't too bad. It gets good about halfway through when he starts becoming Darth Vader, and there's all that stuff once you get rid of General Count Dooku and General Grievous, who is one of the worst villains ever.
See, the funny
he's
thing
just
about...
one of those like round battle droids with a face and four arms. One that of those does four lightsabers.
One of the
big
funny
whoop.
Things about General Grievous is, I don't know if you ever watched the cartoon series about the Clone Wars.
No.
That was made by Genndy Tartakovsky, who did Samurai Jack,
right.
Which is a phenomenal cartoon. And also, I think he did Dexter's Laboratory.
Oh, right.
As well.
Okay.
But his real sort of like great works were these very sparse, minimalist, dramatic cartoons. So Samurai Jack is a wonderful piece of art. And the Clone Wars kind of followed in those footsteps. And there are all these smaller episodes sort of typified by having very little dialogue and just giving these snippets of what the wars were like between episode 2 and episode 3.
Right.
And General Grievous played a big part in that and was a much more interesting character. And then when it came to the big screen, he was kind of there and he had a bad heart and went around shuffling around, breathing heavily, and then died.
Yep.
So, okay.
He was so rubbish and just filling that time where you're waiting for it to get to the Darth Vader moment.
Yeah.
Really annoying.
Where he's going around murdering children and screaming about how everything's unfair.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. That's what I want from my Star Wars.
So this movie, right?
Yeah.
Attack of the Clones.
Romantic as hell.
It is romantic as hell. They spend a lot of time on the romance, and this is the most sort of obvious romantic scenes in any Star Wars film. So,
yeah.
You know, you've got the stuff with Han Solo and Leia, but those are only sort of snippets in these little,
But nonetheless, they're much more believable than this, I think.
Yes, whereas this really goes all in on the romance.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work at all.
No, it's awful. It feels like the seeds of what you see later on in films like After and Twilight and all that stuff, where it's all like, love is torture and it's tearing me apart. Oh my God, I love you so much, even though I know you, I do not even know you. And it's so hard. Oh, it's so dark. That's my impression of Anakin Skywalker.
That's a very good impression of Anakin Skywalker. Yeah, because it's weird from the off, because he's been obsessed with this girl that he knew for about a week when he was 8 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's made very clear that he hasn't seen her since he was a genuine child.
But it does make you think, is that because in the 10 years that Obi-Wan's been training him, Obi-Wan hasn't let him meet any girls?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that in the original Star Wars movies, it's never kind of implied that to be a Jedi, you've got to be a celibate, boring dickhead. Whereas when it comes to the...
Like Morrissey.
Basically, to be a Jedi, you've got to be Morrissey. And that explains why they're so incredibly dull.
Yeah.
whereas when it comes to the prequel movies, it's very much a sort of...
Heaven knows Anakin Skywalker is miserable now.
What difference does a dead youngling make? when you reach the prequels, it's made very clear, maybe not in the first one, because they're kind of just running around doing Jedi stuff, but in the second one and in the third one, it's made abundantly clear that to be a Jedi, you've basically got to be unbelievably boring and do nothing with your life apart from sit around in a robe all day.
Yeah, you can't marry, can't go anywhere. Yeah, all you do is just walk around saying stuff.
Yeah, and I find that's really weird, and obviously, you know, that does stunt him. And that's what I found interesting about The Last Jedi. And I know a lot of people hate that movie. You're wrong. It's really good.
You're wrong. Fuck you if you don't like that film.
and what I loved about it was that it criticized that Jedi way of life quite clearly, and it showed that following to the letter what it means to be a Jedi and having that fear of anger and that fear of being afraid and that fear of hate, it leads to that rigidity that stops you from truly becoming a person at peace with oneself.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of overall message of it, isn't it? Is that, you know, Luke Skywalker, he failed because he felt like he couldn't control the emotions of a teenager.
Yeah.
And that's effectively what happens in the prequels is...
Yeah, in a much more clumsy way, where Anakin literally says they're having... in the middle of a lightsaber battle before he's about to become disfigured and become Darth Vader, they say, "The Jedi use their powers for good." And he goes, "From my point of view, the Jedi are evil." As if they're having a debate at the Oxford Union.
Yeah, exactly. He's been watching too much Space Jordan Peterson. Jordo Petersona would be his Star Wars name.
He's got a real Sith Lord vibe, hasn't he, Jordan Peterson?
He's got a proper...
A slimy Chancellor.
I wouldn't say that he'd be a Sith Lord. I think he'd be like the Hux figure.
Oh,
he's just
right,
the kind of weakling who's there in the Empire who's afraid of the Sith.
Yeah, but still will like use his power on other people if he ever gets the chance.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So yeah, in terms of the Jedi and their feelings towards love, Anakin, our boy Annie, he says...
Attachment. Everyone calls him Annie as if it's...
They do. Attachment is forbidden, possession is forbidden, compassion, which I would define as unconditional love, is essential to a Jedi's life, so you might say that we are encouraged to love.
Yeah. They're very, very clumsily trying to make the Jedi seem a bit like Buddhism. That's all they're trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what
to make it seem like it's all mysterious and woke and stuff.
Because, and I think part of that comes down to the fact that they try to add a bit of fake science into the previous film that was wrongly criticized.
Midichlorians.
Yeah, where rather than it being some kind of special magical force that some people had, the force was in fact down to how many little creatures you had in your blood.
Yep.
It kind of took away from the magic of it. And I think they're trying to bring it back here by showing it as this kind of philosophy.
Yeah, which is always more interesting when it pursues that. And I thought they did that really well in Rogue One, actually, where there's like the monk guy who's all like, "I'm one with the Force is one with me," and stuff. And he actually uses it to get shit done.
Yes, yeah. The Rogue One handled it very, very well, as did The Last Jedi. And so, whereas, you know, and you can see that the framework was kind of put in these earlier films, but it's done in such a rigid way and it's done in such a clumsy way that it doesn't feel that genuine.
Yeah, I mean, the dialogue is really just clunking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, every line is a clanger.
Every line. Well, yeah, every line's a clanger. But I was going to say, maybe not the ones that aren't between Padme and Anakin, but actually, even the rest of the dialogue is incredibly poor in this film.
It just apart from Christopher Lee, because he's Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee is great.
He can do no wrong.
He genuinely gives no shits
and
puts in a great performance as the evil villain.
He's only in about three scenes. Like, he must have known it was rubbish, but he'd have been like, "Yeah, I'll do it. Star Wars. Why not?"
Yeah, exactly.
Not got much else on, apart from recording music videos for power metal bands and stuff, you know?
He's such a cool guy, Christopher Lee.
He was an absolute ledge.
You know, playing a Sith Lord, playing Saruman, being a super heavy metal god, all of the classic horror films, The Wicker Man.
The Wicker Man is incredible.
Ugh.
I've never seen the Nicolas Cage version.
I don't know if I ever have, actually. I think I've just seen clips here and there.
Even just the very idea of it is hilarious.
Yeah, it's... Because I love... Like, folk horror is one of my favourite sort of subgenres of horror. And films like The Wicker Man really sort of set the bar for that.
Mm, yeah.
And so I have been a little bit afraid of seeing it. Just because it has such a bad reputation. And the scenes I've seen are so awful. But, you know, Midsommar's been and gone. Got to find some room for another folk horror film somewhere.
Midsommar.
Let's get. Have I talked about how I went to go and see Midsommar yet?
No, you haven't. Fill me in. I'm never going to see it. So
Midsommar.
Not because I don't like that kind of thing. I just have a baby.
Yeah, it's not baby friendly.
They won't be showing that one at baby cinema.
No, you do see someone's head getting caved in quite graphically with a big hammer.
Cool.
you know, that's a tick mark against it. It's an interesting film. It's very weird. It's very colourful and beautiful. But there's some moments in it that really don't work. Firstly, that it doesn't really take advantage of the fact that it's a folk horror film and it revolves around this cult. It's more interested in the personal relationships of its characters, which doesn't really make good use of its setting or its focus.
Right.
So from the word go, the audience knows what's going to happen, and it kind of takes away from the overall dread of the film. Also, it's a bit weird in terms of being a bit ableist here and there.
Oh, okay.
So it begins with the main character's parents being murdered by her bipolar sister, which is a big no-no. That's very, very bad, and very lazy, because there's actually ways that they could have, if they had to have the parents die, there's ways that they could have tied that back into the overall script, either thematically or structurally in terms of its plot.
Yeah, there's so many different ways you could approach that, isn't there?
In much better ways than just saying, hey, people with mental illness are violent. And so it felt incredibly lazy. And then there's a character there who's got facial deformities because he's been deliberately inbred, because this cult believes that by doing so, they create these people who are almost like their seers, who can write the new texts of their religious books.
Right.
Which is an interesting concept, but then basically they're just playing with, this person looks weird, ergo they're bad. So there's these moments there that are really sort of like a bit ableist, which is not good. And so it was, it's a mixed bag. It was a little bit disappointing, because there was a lot of potential to it that wasn't fully realised, I suppose.
I've generally heard good things about it.
Yeah, but it was good. It was good. It wasn't as good as Hereditary, but it was an interesting film. It just didn't really make use of what it could be, although a lot of it was very, very pretty. It was a really stunningly shot film.
Cool. Maybe I'll get around to seeing it at some point when it comes onto the streaming services.
Like I said, it's got a guy getting his head caved in with a big hammer. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You get to see someone stitched up into a bear and set on fire.
Cool.
So it's got some good stuff.
I do that every weekend. You know, it's all news to me.
Yeah. Oi, mate, you've annoyed me. Come get in the bear suit. Throw a Molotov at you.
That's how it works.
Yeah, that's your average Friday night on the tube.
Yeah. Oh God, the tube. It's a lawless place.
It is. So bad dialogue in this movie.
Yeah. He like compares her to sand, and then suddenly they're kissing. What's that about?
I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere, is one of the best lines of dialogue.
Yeah, that's actually quite Wizzowian, isn't it?
It is, it really
is. As if it's like trying to be poetic, but it's just really weird.
Yeah.
And then they have an awkward kiss as well. This is the thing as well, there's one scene where they're sort of like having a good time together, and playing on, frolicking on the meadow, and he's like riding one of the Naboo creatures or whatever. And then that's literally it's like 2 minutes of them actually being romantic and enjoying each other's company, and the film actually giving you, okay, here's a good bit of their relationship, and here is like actually it building towards the thing. The rest of the time it's, I love you and it's so painful, oh my God.
Yeah, a lot of the time it is kind of,
They spent longer on a really annoying, tedious scene inside a droid factory of them all like having to run under machines so they wouldn't get crushed, in a scene that was definitely put in there so that they could put it into a video game later. They spent longer on that than they did on building up their relationship.
Let me just tell you, Paddy, from the moment I met you all those years ago, and a day has gone by when I haven't thought of you. And now that I'm with you again, I'm in agony. The closer I get to you, the worse it gets. The thought of not being with you. I can't breathe. I'm haunted by the kiss that you should never have given me. My heart is beating, hoping that kiss will not become a scar. You are in my very soul, tormenting me. What can I do? I will do anything you ask. If you're suffering as much as I am, please tell me.
Nah, I'm all right. As you were saying that, I was imagining George Lucas sitting at a desk, like furiously typing that on a typewriter.
No. He's writing with a pen with a Jar Jar head on the top, just in a notebook.
Oh, he doesn't switch to a quill because he's writing romantic Shakespearean poetry.
No, he clicks down on a different colour on the pen. It's one of those multicolour ones. He switches to red.
Red for romance, is it?
Yeah, red for romance. That's definitely right.
Right. Yeah, it's just awful.
And yeah, so let's talk Anakin Skywalker. And I don't want to dogpile too much on Anakin because everyone's bad here, apart from Ewan McGregor, who is good.
Yeah, and to give him his credit, he's very, very consistent across the films, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, he's the only person that has that consistency across all of the prequels, and you can see why there's still that clamour for him to play Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I think he still wants to do it as well, and there's been talk of a Disney live-action series where he'll play him, and it will cover that time between the prequels and the original movies, which would be really good, and I hope he finds the time to do it, and I hope they can get it off the ground.
Yeah, there's rumours of him appearing as a Force ghost in episode 9, isn't there?
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going around, and it'll be nice to see him again as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Although they could use the image of Alec Guinness, of course. But
They could. But I think there is that reason why people still think of him fondly in this role, because he did give it his all, and he really did put in the effort, even though you can clearly tell, particularly in the third movie when he has to say "not the younglings," when he finds out that Anakin
when he's supposed to be doing actual emotional stuff.
Yeah, he is definitely trying not to laugh. It's quite obvious.
And there are bits as well where, like, especially if he's ever flying a ship or he's in danger, where he sort of goes, "Oh, not good," and stuff like that.
Oh dear.
Really made me laugh.
Yeah, it's great. So he's good. I'm not too sure about Padme as a character.
Yeah, she's only there to make him become Darth Vader, isn't she? She's extremely one-dimensional. Although she somehow gets herself into the chain of command for the clones, and I'm not sure how that works. It's like they've only just discovered the clone army, and they've come to save them from the gladiator battle that also goes on forever. And suddenly she's like bossing them around and telling them what to do. And it's like, how did she get into the military chain of command? Not that I'm usually the like military strategy guy, because I don't care, but that did make me think, huh, what?
Well, let me ask you, Paddy, have you ever killed a giant space cat? Because she did.
Yeah, all the time. I climb up on the poles. And
so, you know, none of the Jedi have killed a giant space cat before. They're all like, you know what? She did what we couldn't, and she's not even got a lightsaber.
I'll take the praying mantis instead.
Yeah.
That appears to be walking on its pincers.
Yeah, in a huge design flaw.
Yeah.
Or you've got the angry rhino. Those are your options. So anyway, right.
I totally forgot that scene was in there. And then I was like, they had that just to set up the moment of him doing a really, really long speech about how love is torture and whatever. And then for her to say that she loves him. And then he just goes, "You love me? Her?" Like Scooby-Doo. And then they're out in the battle arena.
Yeah, and then they're killing animals, which is the Jedi way.
Yeah.
So right, let's get back to the romance, right? We're a romance podcast. We talk romance.
Yeah, of course. And this is an extremely romantic film. Anakin's gets right to the heart of what it feels like to love someone, which is torture.
Which is torture. Terrible pain. Anakin Skywalker is a weird creep.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can complain about after, but Anakin Skywalker, he's on the next level to Mr. Grey, isn't he?
He's 18 years old, and he's like constantly like perving on a woman who is, what, 15 to 20 years his senior? I don't know.
I think it's less than that.
Okay, so she's quite a young queen.
Yeah, she's supposed to be a teenager in the original movie, and he's, what, about 8 or 9 years old?
Right, okay.
So I think there's supposed to be like a 6-7 year age gap between them, something like that.
So, not that an age gap is in and of itself problematic, but it's the way he goes about it is just what you wouldn't do that to anyone, I suppose.
Yeah, so basically he...
Just being around her again is intoxicating.
Yeah, so he finds out that they're going to see her, and he's like, "Oh, I'm so excited about seeing her and so nervous." And you're like, "That's a bit weird, Anakin."
Yeah.
And then like in the next scene where they meet for the first time, he's sort of staring at her creepily.
Yeah.
And it's like, "You've grown so beautiful." It's like, all right, I appreciate the line, mate. There's probably not a time to do it because you're here to protect her from the murderers.
And he carries on doing that for scene after scene after scene, and she's not telling him no, which is the annoying part.
Well, she does
say...
And why
her character stinks.
She literally says, don't look at me like that, it makes me uncomfortable. That's a pretty clear no message right there.
Yeah, but then a couple of scenes later, she's kissing him after being compared to sand.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a key to every woman's heart, Paddy, don't you know?
Compared to sand.
Yeah, you go out to a woman.
I love you like a beach of couscous.
You meet up in a bar with someone and you get chatting and you go, you know what? You really remind me of Bognor Regis. And that is that is the key to a woman's heart.
I was down there this weekend.
was it coarse and irritating and did it get everywhere?
Well, actually, the tide was so high that you couldn't even get to the sandy bit of the beach. It was only the rocks.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. It was a shame, but it was very nice nonetheless. Well, it wasn't Bognor Regis, it was Felpham, which is the next bit over. But you can see the Butlins from there.
Okay, there we go.
And a lot of great dogs walking on the front.
Oh, of course, of course. But yeah, so Anakin Skywalker, he turns up. He's immediately creepy and aggressively romantic towards her. She declines his advances, telling her that he makes her uncomfortable.
He makes everyone uncomfortable.
And he just keeps going and he gets really sort of creepy and starts saying, like, I should be an all powerful Jedi master and I should be able to do what I want.
Yeah.
My dad figure never listens to me. It's so unfair. I'm a really frustrated, angry man. And then he jets off to the other side of the galaxy, murders a bunch of sand people and then comes back and is like, I murdered them, even the children.
Yeah, and she decides, whatever.
She decides at that point, you know what? This guy's a keeper. Let's stick with this one. This one's who we want to be with. And yeah, so he is a weird, weird character in this film.
And it's the same even when he tells she finds out that he's killed all the younglings. She's like, oh no, surely not my lovely, extremely romantic Anakin.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, everyone makes mistakes, Annie.
Yeah,
fine.
He didn't really mean to kill literally every Jedi, apart from Yoda.
Apart from Yoda. The key thing to know is when someone says, I'm going to become the greatest space wizard ever, I'm going to learn to stop people from dying. That's how you know that they're a completely stable genius.
Yeah, definitely. They sound like a really advanced, important scientist and you should let them get on with whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the way they approach that as well is the whole reason that he turns to the dark side is to stop her from dying. And then Palpatine immediately is like, oh yeah, you killed her. No! And then that's it. He's Darth Vader.
He's like, right, I'm going to go be super murderous now.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was, but there was this YouTuber who rewrote the Star Wars prequels and did these really in-depth videos about how you didn't have to change everything, but with a few tweaks you could really make it work. And it's fascinating to watch.
A few tweaks like making Boss Nass the protagonist of The Phantom Menace.
Kit Fisto. He's our boy. Yeah, it's a really interesting series. I can't remember who it was for the life of me, but they really did their homework and came up with these incredible stories that not only improved the prequels but also tied them in so much better to the original films. And so it wouldn't take a lot of work, but just doing things like making him feel like a human character and making him feel, because He's not a flawed character. He's not a character with grey areas in this film. He's either the greatest space wizard the world's ever seen, who can do whatever he needs to do, or he's a murderous psychopath. There's no middle ground. There's no conflict. And that's the same in the third film as well, is there's never that conflict there. It's always either on or off, one or the other.
Yeah.
And I think that's really where it falls down. And instead, that's where the prequel, the sequel movies have done quite well, is making Kylo Ren quite a grey area character.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like he's a double agent.
Yes, yeah. And so it's really interesting the way that they framed it. And it's done in such a clever way. And I think it helps that, you know, Adam Driver's putting in great performances as well.
Yeah, but that feels very, very much like that's how it should have been in the prequels in terms of the struggle about whether to go to the dark side or not. It's not just some clunky setup about him wanting to stop his wife from dying. It feels like a genuine philosophical conundrum for Kylo Ren.
Yes, exactly. And that's what's missing from these movies. And it leads all of the characters. And it's clear that all of the films, particularly the prequel films, they're supposed to harken back to like 1950s movies. And George Lucas is always very, very clear and open about those influences, and you can see it in the original Star Wars films of like the side swipes and things like that. They're all filmed in a very traditional way.
Yeah.
And that's a deliberate artistic choice. And that carried over into the prequels. And you can kind of feel that in the way that the characters are portrayed. They all feel very sort of static and rigid.
All of the
scenes feel very rigid. There's no real movement in them. They're all very, very set and focused. And part of that, I guess, is down to the fact that there's so much green screen in them that it's impossible to get that fast movement with the characters because...
Yeah, you know, I mean, the technology has moved on.
Yeah, and for, when was this, 2002, I think it was?
Yes.
It's very, very advanced for 2002.
Yeah, and The Phantom Menace as well. The Phantom Menace is 20 years old. And if you look at the stuff that was coming out in 1999, you know, that very little was like that, if anything. Didn't it win an Oscar for visual effects?
Yeah, I think it did, yeah. And deservedly so, because it's, you know, it really... These movies really did push the boat out in terms of how films looked. And that's easy to overlook now, because all you do now is focus on the content that's there rather than the spectacle around it.
Yeah.
But they did make these really good, solid advancements in film technology. However, the fact that they're so green screen focused, for the time, it meant that all of the sets also had to be quite rigid, which is why you get so much guy walks up, talks with other guy, that's the end of the scene. Because in the background, the actors can't see it, but there's spaceships flying everywhere and, you know, there's a 50s diner going on.
Yeah.
They're serving space bacon and eggs with a side of hash browns, space hash browns.
Space hash browns. I would eat those, for sure.
They're green. They're green space hash browns.
Hell yeah. Give me all of them.
Yeah. and so there is this weird awkwardness to the whole film, isn't there?
Yeah.
Anything that's dialogue and interaction is just really rigid. And then the action scenes feel incredibly free-flowing because they're basically entirely CGI.
Yeah, and so but it becomes they go this on weird... forever.
Yes, yeah. And so there's this weird sort of binary of nothing's happening or too much is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, suddenly nothing is happening and he's talking about how torturous love is, and then the next minute there it is. They're in love and they're about to die in the gladiator arena.
Yeah, that's the way the world works, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
If I had a 20 quid for every time that had happened to me.
Every time I've been in the arena. Oh, jeez. Oh, sorry, I'm tired from having been in the arena yesterday, you know. I had to kill the space cat.
Ah, mate. They're difficult, aren't they, the space cats?
Yeah. They're insane. Always meowing and stuff. Never using the cat flap. Always just coming in through the space door, through the airlock.
They're always demand coming through the airlock.
Yep. Never using the escape pods properly.
So yeah, it's a weird film.
Yeah. I did actually quite like Yoda getting his lightsaber on with Count Dooku. But it only lasted about 2 minutes and then it was over, and then that was the end of the film. You know, like all of that tedious running around inside the like car factory that looked like one of those adverts for cars where they try and go really techie to try and impress you, that just looked like that, as if that was building up to a final lightsaber battle, and then there was a bit of it with Yoda and then it was over. That's it.
Yep, it's very abrupt, the ending of this film.
Yeah.
Much more so than if you compare it to the second part of other great sequels, other great trilogies rather. You know, so you've got The Empire Strikes Back, which has this very sort of it's kind of abrupt in comparison to the first Star Wars.
Yeah, but that's the Luke, I Am Your Father film. That's got it all.
Yeah. But it still sets up what's going to be happening next, and it still has that satisfying conclusion. Or you look at the second film in the Lord of the Rings series, for instance, where that has that very epic battle, and then it quite clearly has this slow winding down of the end of the film that still hints at what's going to happen next. Whereas here, it's very much a sort of, you're done. That's it.
They're getting married, whatever. There's nobody there at their ceremony. It looks like a terrible wedding, but with a very nice view.
Yeah.
There's a very nice ending scene, actually. I always do like how a Star Wars film ends. It always just has like a big sweeping scene and you can hear the music swelling toward the...
It is good.
Honestly, would Star Wars be Star Wars, or like would it be as popular without John Williams if it didn't have that score, if it just had a kind of quite generic score that wasn't catchy?
No, definitely not.
I think it's so integral.
And you can see that it nowadays it does work without it. So Rogue One, for instance, takes things quite differently.
I think I remember saying that actually when we were walking out of Rogue One, that like actually, it didn't have much of the integral score.
Mm.
And not that that was necessarily a bad thing, because I enjoyed it, but it gave it a very different feel. And it does. Solo as well, actually.
Yeah, so tonally, Rogue One feels completely different from the rest of the Star Wars movies. And that's quite interesting. But when you think of the core films, and you particularly think of the success of the original movies, I think that having a memorable theme played a huge part in that. And music is one of the most underappreciated aspects of what makes a movie successful or not.
Always.
And having a tone, having a theme that works with the film, and having a general score that works with the film, you need to have that. Otherwise, your film is going to feel very strange. And it doesn't mean that you have to have a big theme like Star Wars, but you've just got to have something that matches and complements the film that's been created.
Or a score that sets your teeth on edge, like the works of Yorgos Lanthimos always seem to have.
Exactly.
But I think he also has The Favourite, which is a film that we loved and we reviewed very, very highly. But yeah, the scraping noises on the score can get the fuck.
Oh, I really love it, though. You know my feelings yeah. about this.
This is probably one of our biggest disagreements about film.
Yeah,
I could have done a better score. Look, I'm holding a pen and a pair of scissors now. Yeah, you hearing this shit? There you go. That's your score.
I can dig it. I can dig it. That works well for me. You've got a nice industrial feel to that.
Hearing this?
But yeah, so it feels like Star Wars still.
Yes.
But it does. It is a strange movie, and it doesn't really tick any of those satisfying film boxes. And I know that you enjoyed the Yoda fight at the end, but I don't really like that. I don't really like when Yoda...
It's kind of silly.
Yeah, and I don't really enjoy Yoda in the prequels because he's so serious. Whereas if you look at Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back, he's this absolute jerk, this wacky jerk who keeps playing pranks.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And I really love that about him, whereas that playfulness and that sort of charm of his character is kind of lost in the original movies, because he's basically just a frowny little gremlin who's like, I'm wise, I am.
Yeah, if you look behind that door, only pain will you see, or whatever. Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know.
He's like the most obtuse of Zen teaching embodied.
Yeah, and so I'm not really a fan of prequel Yoda that much, and I don't really like the whole backflipping Yoda thing. Because in the original movies, you never see him using that lightsaber. You see his power comes behind his understanding of the Force.
Yeah, and so it's much more meaningful.
Yeah, and so I would have liked to have seen that. So even if he did have to do the fighting, if he turns up and just sort of like, you know, uses lots of protective Force use to create Force fields or...
Yeah, I mean, he can still throw things.
And things like that, yeah. I think that would have worked much better. But... that wasn't the modus operandi of the prequels, where instead it is all about let's have really fast lightsaber battles, because that's well cool, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Christopher Lee versus Yoda, though, that is cool.
Yeah, yeah, it is cool to see Christopher Lee fighting the little man.
Yeah.
But it still feels a bit out of place for what I feel Star Wars is, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is a bit of a shame. It's a bit of a shame.
Yeah. But I don't know how else they could have ended it. Other than, I don't know, some more gladiator machine robot battle stuff. I don't know. Clones versus those weird, like, long-necked droids.
Dance-off.
Yeah.
That's what they need.
Yeah, Star Wars dance-off. Yeah. It's the only way to settle this.
Did you enjoy seeing Boba Fett's dad getting his head cut off?
Yeah, and then Boba Fett holding... Does he hold the head?
Yeah,
he goes down to look at it. He's just holding his dad's head.
Yeah, he's like, well, that's a turn up for the books.
Yeah.
One of the pet peeves
Django
about the
was unchained.
He was beheaded.
Yeah.
One of my pet peeves is the way that they had to tie in everything from the original movies back into the prequels. So you've got like C-3PO was made by Darth Vader.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jango Fett was Boba Fett's dad, and he was used to create all the clones for the Clone Wars.
I don't mind that. I think that's not a bad tie-in. But yeah, C-3PO. It's like every film has to have some C-3PO content, and it's like, actually, he's not that interesting in the prequels. He's not funny. Just leave it.
Excuse me, but he has an incredibly high pun content in this film.
Yeah, but it jars, doesn't it? Because the rest of the film is so, love is torture.
Yeah, and then he's just like, he gets his head knocked off and he goes, ooh, I lost my head. It's just like, love it.
Yeah, and then, yeah, his head gets onto the body of a droid. Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's great. I love the C-3PO nonsense.
Yeah, and R2-D2. And there's an R4, and he keeps trying to make R4 happen. Like when he's flying around in the ship with R4, every second line he's saying, hey, R4, did you know this? Hey, R4, what did you think about this? Do this, R4, 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 R4. It's like, stop trying to make R4 happen. Nobody cares about R4.
Yeah, poor R4. You're already one little droid. He's no BB-8, is he?
No, BB-8 is the best droid. I love BB-8. I stan a round boy.
Definitely. Definitely.
I totally forgot that this film has the explanation of Luke Skywalker's Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, who's played by Joel Edgerton, who just looks young and confused in it.
Yeah, Joel Edgerton is in this. Rose Byrne is in this as well. Yeah. Did you notice Rose Byrne?
Yeah, for like, what, half a second?
She's there for like 1 second and then disappears. Like, wow, what are you doing in this film? It's lovely. There's weird little cameos like that in these movies.
Yeah, but yeah, I enjoyed that, there was an explanation that he married Anakin Skywalker's mum, and then she was taken by the Sand People and all that. That is, again, sort of a nice tie-in to the bits in the episode 4 that, like, who are his aunt and uncle and whatever and that kind of thing. You know, there's some explanation there, so I quite like that.
Yeah, yeah, that was a neat tie-in. It's the kind of thing you needed to see, I guess. Whereas some of them just feel a bit superfluous.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of this film is entirely superfluous.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose.
Lots of Yoda talking Zen bollocks.
A non-puppet Yoda as well.
Yeah.
CG Yoda. I like my weird little Kermit the Frog Yoda thing.
You can tell as well. If you look at it, I did sort of look at it and then compare it to how he looked in the originals, and I think I prefer the puppet thing. It looks more real somehow.
I'm more of a fan of the puppet, definitely.
Well, that might just be like a nostalgia thing, but I don't know.
I like a good puppet. Not going to lie. I like a good practical effect in my movie.
Yep.
So have you got anything else to talk about on this one?
No, I think we can agree that the romance is very, very bad. It's the worst of the Star Wars prequels, but it still has the magic of Star Wars, right?
It does. It does.
Star Wars is ultimately a good thing, even though it's kind of so huge and so franchised and so merchandised and there's so much of it, it is still a good thing. And if you don't like Star Wars, give it a go. Don't start with this one. go and watch the original Star Wars and just go into it without any expectations, because, you know, I think it's not just for nerds. It's good.
Yeah, Star Wars is brilliant. And I love every little bit of Star Wars content, and I wish there was more of it. You know, lots of fans of the series are critical over, they're just going to make a Star Wars movie every year and it's not going to be special anymore. It's like, no, just give me a Star Wars movie every year. Yeah, I'd love it.
Why not?
Give me
one thing every year.
Give me a solid 7 out of 10 Star Wars film every single year for the rest of my life.
You know, maybe if you're lucky, your favorite band tours that often or even less, or releases music or whatever, if you compare it to other things that people enjoy, you know, I think that's all right.
Yeah, I'd be down with a Star Wars movie every year.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all.
No, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and this year we've got episode 9. I'm really excited. Shall we talk about that for a little bit, actually? See how they're supposedly bringing back Palpatine.
I don't want that.
Because you can hear his laugh.
You can hear him laugh.
And the theme that they used for Snoke. Was there some musical similarity there, apparently, which I hadn't picked up on, but...
Yeah, they've got the whole... that kind of thing.
Do you think Snoke was Palpatine?
No, I think Palpatine's going to be there in some way, shape or form, even if it's just like a fucking recording of him. What's going to happen?
he's just got like an 8-track tape machine.
Yes, like, yeah. testing.
1, 2, 1, 2.
Here's what's going to happen. I'm putting it down on the record here. You know how they said that Rey's parents were no one? They didn't mean that in the figurative sense, that they were just a bunch of space drifters or whatever, who just dumped her on a planet.
She's Palpatine's daughter.
Palpatine's clone daughter. They're going to end up in a facility on some old Imperial thing where they've been creating clones of Palpatine, and that's why she's so strong with the Force.
But how do you get a clone to change sex? Is it just a modification that they made for
yeah,
jokes?
They just took his DNA and made a bunch of kids, basically.
Right.
And that's what it's going to be. And it's going to be really irritating, because then it's going to come all the way back round to, oh, yes, I am the chosen one. And it is all to do with DNA. And the Force isn't this magical thing that anybody can have. I'm the super special chosen child.
There's going to be loads of clones of Palpatine all running around.
Yeah, all of them wearing the robes.
Yeah. All of them shouting, ultimate power!
Ultimate power! Yeah, so that's what's going to happen. It's going to turn out that she's some sort of clone or like test tube baby child of Emperor Palpatine.
Would you rather that or that Jar Jar comes back as a Sith Lord?
I mean, I'd love Jar Jar to come back as a Sith Lord.
I actually think that'd be really cool.
It would be brilliant. Jar Jar can fuck off. I'm sorry. he is unbelievably irritating, and I think he's almost more irritating in this film because it's got such,
because he's somehow like a high-ranking politician.
Yeah, and it's got such a different tone, this movie, where it's so much more serious, and all of a sudden Jar Jar Binks is still there
and he's wearing like serious robes.
Yeah, and he's like, hi, I'm gonna be the person who let Hitler get into power before World War II.
Yeah, he's the Neville Chamberlain of the Star Wars universe.
Exactly.
I have here Chancellor Palpatine's signature.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Get in the bin, Jar Jar Binks.
So
that's what I think is going to happen in the new movie, because I think they're scared that, you know, Disney doesn't like taking risks, and I think they realize that The Last Jedi took quite a lot of risks, and so they're going to bring it back and be an incredibly tame movie for the final one of this trilogy. So I think they're going to be like, yeah, her parents did mean something, and what else can we do? Oh yeah, everyone liked Palpatine, let's bring Palpatine back, and maybe we'll put in another Death Star because we haven't had enough of them yet.
Yeah, if that is the case, then that sucks.
Yeah, and I'm still going to enjoy
it. I'm really excited for it, and I really hope that that is not the case.
Yeah,
The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens did surprise me in many ways, and that was part of the joy of it, actually.
Yeah, I think this is going to be more of The Last Jedi, so a bit more fan service-y.
And they won't have Poe Dameron and what's John Boyega's character called? They won't have them being Finn. A couple. Finn, yeah. Finn and Poe, who are the real couple of the film, I think. I'm shipping Poe and Finn.
No, because it's Rose and Finn.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Poe and, I don't know who Poe's going to have sex with. Somebody.
BB-8.
You just look at Poe Dameron. That's a man that gets around.
He's a dog.
For it. We need to see a bit more of that.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I'd watch a film just about him.
I want a spin-off that's Poe Dameron in Saturday Night Fever. That's what I want.
Yep. I would watch that.
Yeah. That's
BB-8 just rolling around on the dance floor as his buddy takes him home when he's had a few too many.
Yeah. Disney, give the fans what they want.
Yeah. Sort it out, Disney.
Oh, dear. So, right. Do you want some trivia about this movie?
Sure. Why not?
So, do you want to know who else was in the running to play Anakin Skywalker?
Oh, yes, actually.
So you had Ryan Phillippe, Misha Collins, Paul Walker, Colin Hanks, Christian Bale. Heath Ledger, James Van Der Beek, Leonardo DiCaprio.
That would have been amazing with his crying Dawson face.
Exactly.
He'd be crying every time Padme said anything.
Yeah, but Hayden Christian got the part primarily because he and Natalie Portman looked good together, apparently.
According to who? George Lucas.
Excuse me, George Lucas. He is the hero of our time.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so that's interesting, I think. There are so many people in the running, but it ended up going to Hayden Christensen. I think, unfortunately, his career's kind of been dampened by the fact that he was in the Star Wars prequels and was heavily maligned for them. But, you know, I think he's been in plenty of things. He was in Jumper. Did you ever watch Jumper?
No.
That
was
like
a film about
sweaters. It was, yeah. And he was in a rom-com the other year with Emma Roberts.
All right. Maybe we should watch that at some point then.
Yeah, it's like Romeo and Juliet apart from pizza restaurants.
Cool. I'd go for that. Anything with pizza, I'm there.
exactly. So he's been in stuff here and there. His career hasn't dried up, but unfortunately I think, you know, it's always going to be overshadowed by the fact that he was in Star Wars. But yeah, where was I? Oh yeah, so Terrence Stamp, you might remember that he was in the original Phantom Menace. He did not return here, saying that actors prefer to work with actors, in reference to the sheer amount of green screens and things like that in this movie.
Right.
Which, you know, fair fucks, Terrence Stamp. You knew when to bow out gracefully.
Yep.
which is great. So it's a weird film, isn't it?
Yeah, very odd. Is that trivia?
Yeah, I can't. There's so much trivia for this film, and I really can't be bothered to go through so much of it. The only thing I'll add is, you know, the death sticks guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, you want to buy some death sticks?
You do not want to sell me death sticks. It never explains what they are, obviously.
But. No, they're supposed to be a hallucinogen, apparently. They're
right,
kind of like
right.
LSD cigarettes. But apparently, you know, he has those two antennae on his head.
Yeah.
They were added with CGI instead of it being part of the costume.
Sure, why not?
Why not? If you've got that much CGI in your movie already, go wild with it. Add antenna to people.
Someone who was working
reason.
In the CGI department had some time that afternoon.
Yep, and just decided, hey, you know what? throw some antenna on that fella right there.
You know, he's working hard. He's earning his cash. He's not kicking back. He's not lazy. The CGI buddy is like, hey man, we're going down the pub. He's like, no, sorry, I've got to finish these antenna. It's got to look perfect.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so yeah, that'll do. Screw it.
Good trivia.
I can't be bothered with more. It's late.
It is late. I'm tired. But it's nice to do a Star Wars special and just generally talk about the magic of Star Wars because it is cool and fun.
Yeah, it is. It is cool and fun. I've enjoyed it. So how are we ranking this one then?
How many grains of sand have stuck in your feet and are coarse and irritating?
That's a good one. I'm going with 9 grains of sand. This is not a good movie, but I still enjoy it because it has death sticks.
it's less than a Bon Jovi. I think that sounds kind of fair. I'll give it an 8. Similar ballpark.
Yeah, it's still Star Wars. You can't go wrong.
It's still
with Star
Wars, but it is also really annoying.
It's got a character called, might I remind you, Kit Fisto in it.
Kit Fisto, Mace
Dexter
Windu,
Dexter Jetster, Nate Gunray.
Yep. The Viceroy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to credit the Star Wars prequels for bringing the word Viceroy to a new generation of kids.
Exactly. Gains a point for that. This is a good one. It's also a bad one.
Yeah. A good one, but also a bad one. And yeah. I like when films are like that.
Yeah, it's probably the worst Star Wars movie, but it's still got C-3PO making puns and people's heads getting chopped off with lightsabers.
We can all agree on C-3PO.
Yep. Right, so up next, it's my choice, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So we're going back to romance.
Proper romance.
Yeah, so we're not going rom-com, but there's a movie that's come out on Netflix.
Oh, good.
It's always a good start.
No, just based on the last one you chose that was on Netflix.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that it follows suit in that respect. So we're going to be watching a movie called Secret Obsession.
Secret Obsession? Yeah. This sounds a bit in the 50 Shades ballpark. I know absolutely nothing about this film.
It's come up.
Is it sexy?
I think it's a bit sexy.
Cool.
It's a movie about amnesia and secret obsessions.
Okay, I'm down.
Don't watch the trailer, because the trailer appears to give away the entire plot of the film.
Okay, I won't.
But it's on Netflix. It's a Netflix original, I think. And it looks dumb as a bag of hammers.
Excellent. That's what we like.
Righty.
Cool. Well, I think we've gone on long enough. Let's leave it there. But if you have thoughts on Star Wars and stuff in general, you can always get in touch with us on the emails, bigboysdon'tcrypodcast@gmail.com, or on Twitter @bigboysdon'tpod. Always love to hear from you. Do you believe the Jar Jar is a Sith Lord theory?
What would be your terrible Jedi name?
Yeah. Yeah, we need to. There's still a few slots open on our intergalactic 8-bit baseball team. We need you.
You've got to choose the name of a pet dog from the 1970s and then take the name of either an adverb or a body part and add a verb to the end of it.
Yeah, and then add a couple of random vowels onto it as well. I couldn't remember the word vowels then for a second.
Yeah, you've got...
This is, you know how when like you learn something new, it pushes something old out of your brain? It's like that.
Exactly. So just for an example, you take the name of a pet from the 1950s, so Bud, and then the name of a body part, spleen, add some vowels.
Bud Spleenu. There you go.
It's easy.
These names write themselves.
Yeah. So yeah, give us your Jedi name.
Yeah, I need to now draw a picture for you of Bud Spleenu.
Oh dear.
Oh, very good, very good. Well, this was a lot of fun, but yeah, now we must sleep.
Yes.
So we'll let you go and hope you enjoyed Star Wars. Star Wars is good.
It is. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.